Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome to Curaleaf, a medical marijuana dispensary. Whether you're a longtime patient or you're just getting acquainted with this incredible plant, Curaleaf of Pennsylvania is honored to guide you along your medical marijuana journey. Visit us soon at our new State College location.
This is the Blue White Breakdown, the premier podcast for all things Penn State football.
Talk about culture. It's something that should show up in every aspect of your program.
It's the Blue White Breakdown, brought to you by Penn Live. Here are your hosts, Bob Flounders and David Jones.
It's another edition of the Blue White Breakdown, and today we have a member of the enemy.
Yeah.
The enemy camp. Longtime Ohio State beat writer. Jeez, and when I say long time, I mean a long time, because he did it for the Columbus Dispatch for like over four decades. Football Writers Association Hall of Fame member. You got, what was that award you, they gave you some beat writer of the year a few years ago. Anyway, his name is Tim May, and he now works for On3. What's the name? It's Letterman Row is the name of the On3 Ohio State.
LettermanRow.com. We got absorbed by On3.com a year and a half ago.
We got such a history, the two of us. Just full disclosure. I think you were the first person I ever talked to who was a real live journalist back in 1980 for a class I was in at Ohio State. Do you remember this? We've talked about it. Do you remember this?
I'm going to fake like I do, but I really, seriously, I don't. But I'll play along. Are there prizes at the end if I play along?
We've known each other 42 years, but the reason we're having Tim on is that he can, I think he can give a pretty keen perspective on where Penn State sits in this league. For one reason, because he's been covering it longer than Penn State's been in the league, which isn't true about a lot of people covering college football in the Big Ten now. But also because I would say, how would you characterize the Penn State-Ohio State rivalry such that it is at this point?
I think it's such as it is as we speak. It's been a little lopsided Ohio State for the most part, you know, recently. But there's no doubt about it, man. When Joe Paterno and company rolled into the league in the early 90s, I mean, they didn't come in shorthanded. Let's put it that way, sort of like Nebraska did. Although Nebraska wasn't that bad when they first showed up. But, you know, Joe Pye had them ready for the to step into the Big Ten. I mean, he relished being part of the club, you know, from what I could tell. And, you know, for a while there, they were a domo, you know. They obviously, we know what happened, the fall off, et cetera. But now they've climbed back. But boy, it's hard to climb back to the top of the mountain, as you know, Dave, once you've fallen off. That's why you give credit to these programs that get at or near the top and stay there, because it's tougher to stay there than it is to get to the top. But right now, I would say they're in a good position. If it was Mount Everest, they're at the probably the base camp just below the peak, but sitting on the peak, you know, is Ohio State, which kind of got shoved to the side last year. But I mean, when you look at it again, I mean, there you are, Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State. That's a pretty good triumvirate.
So that's the way you look at them in a trio with those three at the top.
Yeah, and maybe in that order, Ohio State, Michigan, and Penn State at this point. Boy, you got to give Michigan his props. It won the Big Ten last year. you know, they finally got that monkey off the back, and all of a sudden they're running around like they invented football again. So, you know, that is what it is. That's another podcast.
Well, I wasn't going to get into this, but what'd you think of Harbaugh's statement that he's not just going to go out and blatantly pay for players?
You know, when there's a truck rolling through town, and it's taking you to a different place, you either jump on or you don't. And buddy, you know, we are not, as in we guys who cover it, the guys who play it, the schools that sponsor it, This puppy is not going back into the lamp, man. This Aladdin has emerged, and it's going to keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger. As I told you, man, it's like the NCAA's finally come to terms. They're trying to like fix the bus in Chicago, not knowing the bus is already in St. Louis, you know, and there's no going back on this. They may retreat in some areas, or they may come down hard and decide, hey, we're going to stand, you know, together in large to try to at least stem some of the stuff that's going on, which, you know, let's face it, you should still be able to differentiate between the NFL and big time college football from the standpoint of the way it's structured, et cetera. But you're never getting that name, image, and likeness thing back in the bottle and the transfer portal. You've given too many people too much freedom. They can legislate some things that can like maybe curb that a little bit. But when you combine those two, you know, what's that old saying? Once you've tasted freedom, man, you don't want to go back. And that's what these players are feeling right now.
Now let's get at this. You're a 68-year-old man, and you've been a fan of this game for over half a century.
Yeah.
Growing up on, you grew up in Alabama with Joe Namath and Kenny Stabler and Stedman Sheely, and
I wasn't there for Stedman Sheely, but go ahead.
You were in Lufkin, Texas by then, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
The point is that your love of the game comes from a very basic and soulful place, I think, at a time when even coaches were making no more than our dads, you know?
Yep.
What is your response when you hear fans say that NIL is the death of college athletics?
It's not a terse response. It's not succinct because there's a lot of explanation going on. And, you know, ironically, we just put my mom and dad's ashes finally to rest at Bethany Baptist Church north of Northport, Alabama, this past weekend. But we stayed at the Capstone Hotel, which is in literally straight across the street from the Alabama football facility and literally three blocks east of Bryant-Denny Stadium. And, you know, walked by that place with first games I went to with my older brother and my dad way back when. The place seated like 39,000, 40,000. Now, of course, it's one of the great palaces of major college football. That's a great example of how far it's come.
The same thing has happened with Beaver Stadium. You know, it exactly the same thing.
But the football facility, as we've come to know and to lovingly call those buildings, and then the stadiums are great examples of how far the game has come since the 1960s. In both State College and in Tuscaloosa. And Ohio Stadium was always pretty large, but of course now it's 105,000 instead of like I think originally 69,000. You know where I'm going. My point is, though, a lot of things like coaches' salaries, et cetera, escalated during those times, but the way the players' tuition, room and board, books, and a little bit of a stipend to live on did not escalate. So this was all coming one way or another. You know, it's funny, Dave, because last year I was marveling at the fact that the NCAA waited so long to not pay players maybe what they were their just due that someone else came along and decided to do it. You know, name, image, and likeness. So that monkey was off their back, you know. And this is a funny thing. What I was getting to about shoving everything back in the bottle, they waited so long that states passed or executive orders were signed that in essence give players the legal right to name, image, and likeness proceeds, not an NCAA rule that allows it. And that's a total different deal because NCAA does not, they have legislation all the time, but it's not true legislation. It's not law, it's rules. Well, in Ohio, Alabama, Pennsylvania, everywhere, people now have laws that allow college athletes to take part in name, image, and likeness. So that's not going in. But the point is, yeah, you and I talked about this before many times, whether we're on a podcast or just shooting a bull.
This is what I want to know from you. Is this going to ruin college football? I don't think so in the slightest. Not even in the slightest.
I think it remains to be seen because – you know, we all know about the kid who committed to Miami. Now he claims he didn't do it because of the promised name, image, and likeness deal he got. I mean, CJ Stroud is now legally driving around in a Mercedes AMG whatever it was called, Super Wagon. He turned down a Bentley for that. You know, my point is, I'm not sure where this is going. I am glad to be here, though, when things did change dramatically, because I was calling for players to be sharing in the largesse 30 years ago, maybe longer ago than that. But when television got involved, it changed everything. That, you know, no television show in its right mind, no television network in its right mind is going to pay hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars to show. Well, they might. To show Ryan Day going against James Franklin, you know, on Xbox, you know what I mean? They want to see the players doing their thing. And that's the value of the player.
This is what I'm getting at. I mean, are people going to quit going to – are they going to quit watching games? No, they're not going to quit watching games. And would it be better if we still had guys walking around in suits, athletic directors and associate athletic directors – and presidents reaping the benefits of this huge TV money rather than families of football players? I say hell no.
No.
Would you rather see that? No.
You wouldn't, because really they're doing the same jobs they were doing many years ago, except now they have many more assistants, you know, helping them do it, for example. Yeah, if Gene Smith was running a 36-sport Ohio State athletic program all by himself, that would be a different deal. I don't begrudge guys in those positions for making that kind of money, though, because these are big corporations that are running, whether they want to call them corporations or not. The only thing you begrudge is the fact that the players weren't sharing in it like they should have been. Ohio State, though, through the years, whatever, quote, legally, end quote, was available to the players from the NCAA rule standpoint, they've tried to make available to them. And obviously, you know, this year, you know, you're getting, I think the players are getting like a $6,000 stipend. All scholarship athletes are a $6,000 stipend that's new to help them with, you know, their otherwise expenses of going to college, which is a step in the right direction. But boy, is it late, you know, really late.
I don't think it even matters anymore.
No, it does.
But enough of the money, because people will glaze over everyone's eyes if we talk about money forever, and that will.
Before we go from that day, and they may glaze over thinking about it, whatever, but it is here to stay in some form or fashion, and you better get used to, for want of another way of putting it, an almost bidding war as this thing escalates.
I just don't know why this bothers some people, but teenage kids in all other sports, bonus babies in baseball, hockey, basketball, making this kind of money, that bothered people as long as they're pros. But making it within the college athletics realm that was supposed to be sacrosanct for anything like that to happen, this bothers people. It was always a big, dirty business, and they just didn't get it. They didn't get part of it. That's all. That's all. So enough of it. Enough of it.
I'm sitting outside Maurice Clarett's apartment way back in 2003 when all that mess was going on, and there were some little kids there. And I'm there with a couple other reporter guys from TV, from Channel 10 here, but we're just sitting there hanging out waiting for him to come home or something. And to ask him some things. But anyway, and I asked those little kids, are you surprised that Maurice Clarett has a nice car, you know, for example? And no, they weren't. You know what? And one little kid goes, no, he goes, because he's the biggest sports name in town. This is a little kid, 13-year-old kid. Little kids got it way back when. I did a story on Rick Nash, the first big-time bonus baby for the Columbus Blue Jackets, and Terrell Pryor back in 2009, I think it was. And the premise of the story was, if these two guys were walking down the streets of Columbus, which one would you more quickly recognize? Without a doubt, it was Terrell Pryor.
You're Terrell Pryor.
Exactly. So this has been a long time coming about these guys getting something other than just recognition of their image. You know, it's about time they got some money for it.
This is the Blue White Breakdown.
Welcome to Curaleaf, a medical marijuana dispensary. Whether you're a longtime patient or you're just getting acquainted with this incredible plant, Curaleaf of Pennsylvania is honored to guide you along your medical marijuana journey. Have questions? Visit us at curaleaf.com or stop in to see us at any of our locations, including our new State College dispensary located at 1248 South Atherton Street. Let's talk medical marijuana and let our confidence become yours.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Let's completely shift gears. I try to make smooth transitions instead of 90 degree ones like this.
But segways.
You can't always do it. Yeah. Describe James Franklin's image as he's seen by the rest of the league in your eyes.
You and I have had discussions about him before. I think he's a really good recruiter. There have been decisions made in football games which still make you scratch your head, et cetera, you know? Hey, but if they had executed properly, they would have won. You know what I mean? that old tried and true explanation of things. But I think he's done a damn good job at Penn State, in my opinion, considering sort of where it was, the abyss that it fell into there for a little while after the Sandusky situation and everything that followed that. Dude, it was always going to be hard to follow Joe Paterno, but we all know things had kind of fallen off anyway in the latter years under Paterno, kind of like what happened at Florida State to a certain extent under Bobby Bowden. And, you know, Bobby Bowden made the mistake of letting them hire a coach in waiting at his spot. And eventually they exercised that option. You know, Bill O'Brien, I think, did an admirable job. But I think James Franklin has there was somebody in between there, too, or before that. I can't remember. I can't remember everybody who followed.
No, that's it. That's it. Yeah. That's all.
But,
that's all.
I think James Franklin, I mean, you look at how they're recruiting even this year and stuff. It's there. But, like, he made a great point several years ago, and a lot of people thought it was excuse making. I didn't. I thought it was basically stating it as fact, which is the fact is when you're slightly behind – another program, it is extremely difficult to catch up because that other program, like Ohio State, if it's doing things the right way, it is getting better every year. It is improving on either recruiting or facilities and stuff or coaching staffs, et cetera, that are improving it. So you may be improved from one year to the next, but you can't prove it with your one loss record. I think a great example last year was Nebraska of all teams. The games they lost were crazy, but the final record spoke for itself, right? But I've always equated it to auto racing. When a team is slightly ahead from a technology advancement standpoint, you may be working on the same thing, getting to where they are now, but that team is working to get faster even still. And it's really hard to play catch up after you fall behind. I'm telling you, Ohio State, man, has had it going on now since 2012, since Urban Meyer stepped in, and then followed by Ryan Day, who's proved to be quite capable from a recruiting standpoint and facility standpoint. You know, they take a backseat, in essence, to few in this modern age, and it's tough to play catch-up, man, I'm telling you.
Michigan finally got over the hump last year and finally beat Ohio State. What's it going to take for Penn State to do the same thing?
Exactly what Michigan did. They got to beat Ohio State. They've got to win the Big Ten, which, you know, they did, you know, quite a few years ago. But they've got to beat Ohio State. They've got to win the Big Ten. They got to get to the college football playoff. But then it starts all over again, you know, right after whether you get beat in the semifinal, the final, or you win it. It starts all over again. But I think personnel-wise.
Well, I want to be more specific about what it's going to take for them to do that. And I've got something specific in mind. I think Brian Hartline has been the most underrated assistant coach in college football for a number of years now. I think he's been on staff for 4 or 5 years. And he has transformed, along with Ryan Day, that entire Ohio State program. This program used to, even under Urban Meyer, they would run that spread option over and over. And finally, they hit a threshold again in that Clemson game, that 31-0 Fiesta Bowl, where even Kirk Herbstreit was going, this offense is moldy. It is not working against defenses like this. You're not going to be able to run your quarterback in college football against defenses like this. They need to make a change. And I think Ryan Day really did that, and Brian Hartline helped him, because Brian Hartline has been getting not just good, but great wideouts and a whole squadron of them, while at the same time, Penn State had four different wideouts coaches in 4 years. Now, Taylor Stubblefield, this will be his third year, but this is the first place he's been at for 3 years since he was in school at Purdue. I think that has been a very telling division between the two programs, where in 2017 and 2018, they played a couple of knockdown drag-out games where Penn State was ahead by double digits in the fourth quarter, and they had those wideouts. But the last few years, really, even though the games have been relatively close, the talent on the field, you can see it, especially on the flanks. So what do you think of all that?
Could you repeat that?
I tend to get going. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. I mean, you know, like the three amigos for Ohio State back in 2018, when Brian Hartline was suddenly promoted to wide receiver coach by Urban Meyer after he had to suddenly fire Zach Smith. Well, Zach Smith had helped recruit those guys and helped develop those guys. But Brian Hartline, I don't think there's any doubt, has taken it to another level. But like you said, it's part and parcel with the fact that Urban Meyer had brought in Ryan Day the year before in 2017 to revamp their passing, basically add that more over-the-top, big-time passing game to the offense. And it definitely has showed. And all they've done is add to that since then. And like I told you a while ago about playing catch-up, man, Ohio State has now become a destination for big-time quarterbacks and big-time receivers. Just look at those three receivers they got over like a week and a half, 2 week span commitments a couple of weeks ago. Look at they've got, depending on where you look, they've got three five-star quarterbacks or at least high five, four-star quarterbacks in the fold right now, with another one coming in a couple of years, Dylan Raiola. But C.J. Stroud, everybody knows how good he is now. Kyle McCord from right there in Pennsylvania, right there, 4.5, 5-star. And then Devin Brown, the number one quarterback in the signing class of 2022, they're all sitting there in the same quarterback room. They replaced a couple of guys who went elsewhere, Quinn Ewers and the other kid, but he's down in Florida. But the bottom line is they've made it a destination school for big-time wide receivers and quarterbacks. And then you throw in there, they've got a stable of big time running backs. It's hard to play catch up in all those areas, and a really great offensive line. It looks like, or potentially great offensive line stepping up this year, even though they lost a couple of guys from last year's line. You know, just to name names, et cetera, is not what it's all about. It's also committing to a big time passing attack. You know, Ohio State led the nation last year in total offense, and at times was what I think mediocre in the running game. But, oh, my goodness, Ohio State has never thrown the ball like it did a year ago. And with the audacity of throwing the ball, that's where Ryan Day and this approach have really stood out. You still got to get the Jimmys and Joes to go with those X's and O's. And like I said, I think Penn State's doing a hell of a job recruiting, but it's really, really, really tough to play catch up when another place has got just such in my opinion, a big time lead in it.
Yeah, I think the latest recruiting rankings, and you can throw out some of the rankings. They rank schools with a volume of players, but you look at who they recruited, and they're really 3-star players. And those schools are up in the rankings where they won't be later on. Where Alabama really hasn't chosen who they're going to have, and they're going to rise back up to where they have been, but the rankings basically have borne out that it's Ohio State, it's Texas, It's Penn State. It's Clemson. It's schools that, who have established that you're gonna be able to get these guys to the NFL. And if you can do that, that's half the battle. Let's go back to where you think Penn State is as far as coaching the guys they get and where they are as far as who their personality is. We talked about who Ohio State is. I think Penn State has for instance, Wisconsin knows who they are. I think Michigan knew who they were. They were a smash mouth team last year, and I think they beat Ohio State because they knew their personality. I'm not sure Penn State knows who it is right now. So respond to that.
I think Penn State knows who it is. Is that the way you put it? Or knows who they are? Yeah, knows who. If we were in England, knows who they are. Knows who it is. You know, I'm not casting aspersions because I think this kid's a really good player. But, dude, it's who you got under – well, not under center. It's who you've got getting the ball in the pistol or shotgun depth now. I'm talking about the quarterback. That makes such a difference. When you look around the country, you see the teams are going to be competing for the national championship this year, at least on paper going into the season. They've got big-time quarterbacks. You and I have had this discussion before. I think Sean Clifford is a really, really good quarterback. But, man, did you watch the Rose Bowl? You know what I mean? You've just got to have the guys who can, like Justin Fields before, and even JT Barrett. God, rest in peace, Dwayne Haskins Jr. Guys that are just a notch above in whatever it is, who could just make plays when you need them, either throwing the ball, running, or maybe doing both. And that's what really comes back and defines things.
Well, Tim, I mean, if I may interrupt, I don't think Jackson Smith and Jigba has been covered by Utah yet. I think he's still open.
Oh, yeah. But dude, what did Ohio State do? They exploited the fact, finally, that Utah had quite a dearth of capable players in their secondary going into that Rose Bowl and then lost a guy, at least one guy during the game. They exploited. My point is, you've got to have offensively, you've got to have it in your arsenal to take advantage of whatever that other defense most allows. And that's exactly what Ohio State did against Utah finally. They got it going. Utah could not stop them. If that game had kept going, it might have been Ohio State 84, Utah 58. You know what I mean? If you could have played two more quarters. My point was, in a quirk of fate, Michigan ended up being extremely stout last year, exactly where Ohio State defensively had an Achilles. And that was maybe a defensive line and a linebacker group that weren't quite up to snuff. And it might not have been as much the players involved as it was the schemes being played. And Michigan could see it coming down the road after the Oregon game. They could see it coming around down the road. Now, those are the only two teams that beat Ohio State last year. But Michigan could see it coming down the road, and they had a matchup situation that they took advantage of, which Ohio State, Ryan Day, could hardly wait to address in the offseason with hirings, et cetera, and firings.
I think we could see it in the Penn State game in Columbus, in that Penn State's defensive line, this was supposed to be a pretty damn good Ohio State offensive line also.
Yeah.
And Penn State's defensive line kind of handled them until Henderson got free on one long run. They were not the team at scrimmage that I think Ohio State had been before.
And what else did Ryan Day change? Ryan Day changed his offensive line coach from last year to this year, bringing in Justin Fry from UCLA, a guy he's had any experience with before, and just basically to address the fact that push come to shove several times last year, they were not good enough running the football, lining up and running down your throat. I mean, Ryan Day might have finally this year offensively his consummate offense. A team that will have power, basically power within the tackles or running the ball, a guy they can put in the backfield other than Trevion Henderson, a guy in Evan Pryor who can scare you like Curtis Samuel did several years ago on the edge, but then with three or four or five of the best receivers in the country, with an offensive line that they think can be really good, This might be the best Ohio State offense perhaps ever. And I know you grew up a big Ohio State fan. That's saying a mouthful.
You know what, though? I think you know this. I do get a kick now when Penn State beats Ohio State.
Of course you do.
It's so much more fun when Penn State beats Ohio State. And I enjoy it when Penn State wins that game a lot.
Wait, let's go back to something, though, you mentioned, though, a minute ago, Dave. They've had some dips and stuff. But I think Penn State still plays defense at a high level for the most part. I think when you play Penn State, it was kind of like it used to be when Ohio State would play Michigan State way back in the day. You know, you're in for a fist fight, man. You know, a heavyweight fist fight. Now, you know, that doesn't mean any heavyweight can be beaten, as Buster Douglas showed Mike Tyson. But it's got to be done, you know. You got to keep punching, as Buster found out, you know. But I think the quality is still there from a defensive standpoint with Penn State. You know, you're in for a fight, a heavyweight fight, when you play them every year. I think you agree with me on that. That doesn't mean they're always going to shut you out or make the play that matters in the end. But it's going to be a physical afternoon or whiteout night when you play them. You agree with that, right?
I have a kind of a unique perspective on this more than a lot of guys from the East, simply because I'm a Midwestern native. I'm an Ohio State graduate. I know so many people back in Ohio who tell me, I would never say Ohio State fears anybody, but I think they have concern about Penn State more than Michigan over the years, over the maybe the last 10 years. They've had more concern about Penn State than they have anyone else.
Absolutely.
Anyway, thanks for being with us, Timbo. We didn't even get all the funny stories. We could have just told stories about the old days. Maybe we'll do that next time. There's so much topical stuff to deal with, though, right now. We had to do this. Take it easy, man, and thanks for being with us.
This has been the Blue-White Breakdown, brought to you by Penn Live.